I was serious. You're barely functioning. I'll take you home.
She considered that for a whole second. Would you take any of the other guys home? He didn't like that. She saw it in the way his eyes narrowed, but he didn't lie.
No.
Then you aren't taking me home. He dug in his pocket, came out with a candy bar.
Then take this.
It was a Baby Ruth, chocolate and peanuts, a triple whammy of sugar, protein, and a little bit of caffeine. Oh, thank God. She grabbed it from him, not caring at all that he was the one to provide it, and tore it open as enthusiastically as a tiger on a fresh kill. From now on, she'd carry her own supply of candy bars. She learned something new on every mission.
Thanks.
Without acknowledging her thanks, he turned back to his truck and climbed in. Gina trudged through the snow to her car, still gnawing on the Baby Ruth. As she passed a couple of the guys, she saw that they were chewing on something too. So evidently this was something they did to give them a last burst of needed energy. She wondered if she'd taken Levi's only bar of candy. If so, tough. Because they'd just come home from such a long, convoluted job, they didn't have to show up at the training site again until Wednesday, and she needed every hour of the recovery time. When she got home, she fell face down on the couch and slept 4 hours, then woke befuddled and annoyed. Not knowing what else to do, she changed to sweats and went for a run. Then she ate some peanut butter crackers, showered, and went back to bed. The fitful, out-of-sync sleep continued. She was awake at midnight, doing laundry. After another nap, she forced herself to stay awake all day Monday, going for a couple of short runs, cleaning out the refrigerator, buying groceries. Her brain felt as if it was made of fog. But she stayed awake until a reasonable hour, then slept 12 hours and woke feeling much better, except for the memory of a vivid dream about Levi. She didn't want to relive those moments in the field when he'd been kissing her, as if he could inhale her. But her subconscious decreed otherwise. He had given her his candy bar, the bastard. Just when she got a mental wall against him somewhat built, he'd do something like that. Or like going to the tattoo parlor to protect her, and bam, all her carefully placed mind blocks came crashing down. Her dream wasn't exactly like what had actually happened. In her dream, the entire team stood around watching and making angry comments. She woke feeling depressed. How else could the guys be expected to react? Even her subconscious agreed and hammered the lesson home. She remained depressed all day Tuesday. Even a long run that exhausted her didn't produce enough endorphins to counteract her angry longing. She wanted Levi, not just physically, though that was intense, but the everyday things that cemented life. She wanted to eat breakfast with him, argue with him, bitch at him about leaving the lid up, snuggle against his back at night. Never before had she cared about a man enough to think about a life together, but with Levi, yes, she wanted that. Why couldn't she have felt this way about Donnelly? He was a nice guy. Going through life with him would be easy and comfortable, with shared laughter. On the other hand, nothing about Levi struck her as easy. He was hard, somewhat grim, uncompromising. He lived a dangerous life, regularly risking injury and death. And he did it without hesitation.
Hard on that thought came the realization that she shared that life, that her part in the missions was mostly in the background, but not without risk.
She was that extra layer of protection for him and the other guys. What if something happened to him, to any of them, on her watch? A chill ran through her. She should have realized this before, and on a superficial level she had, but until this moment she hadn't felt the weight of responsibility for their lives. The heavy mantle of it settled on her shoulders, sank into her pores, and forever changed how she regarded her job. Levi could die if she screwed up. No matter how angry she got at him, no matter how much the situation frustrated her, that home truth drove her hard when Wednesday rolled around, and they returned to their training routine. After such a long mission, they were slated to be home for a healthy stretch, but they never slacked up with the training. For her part, she ran harder, longer, pushing herself more than she ever had before, and she'd pushed herself plenty. She put in long hours with Tweety's program, practicing, and then practicing some more, honing her skills. Whoever's ass Levi had crawled up about her malfunctioning throat mic came through with a replacement that was guaranteed to work. The problem had evidently been a bad laryngeal sensor. She put the new throat mic through the mill, making the guys participate despite their belly aching, on the grounds that it was their butts on the line. The new mic performed the way it was supposed to, with clear and reliable audio into their headsets. Finally satisfied, she gave it a thumbs up.
"About time," Levi said dryly when he found out. "Now we can go active again."
She was startled enough to look directly at him, something she tried not to do, because the impact of his intense gaze was enough to make her falter. He was standing closer than she liked, close enough that she was caught in his gravitational pull. She had to fight to keep from leaning closer to him.
"What?"
"All the equipment has to be okayed before we go."
Her mouth fell open.
"You mean, we were waiting on me?"
"Yep."
One side of his mouth quirked.
"Not that we minded the downtime, but I was beginning to think you were going to design and manufacture your own."
"Why didn't you say something?"
"You're in charge of Tweety. Until you say it's ready to go, it doesn't go. If there had been an emergency, we'd have gone without you, but things worked out."
"Go without me?"
she repeated, horrified by the idea, though logically she knew that if a team member got hurt, the rest of the team would deploy without him if necessary.
"We got along without you before,"
he pointed out, his tone even and a little cool, the way it always got when he wanted to put some distance between her and the rest of the team. It stung, and she tried never to let him see that it stung. Did he think that if he managed to push her out, she'd still want to get involved with him? She'd be mad as hell, because she didn't like to fail at anything. She wouldn't let herself quit, and she'd fought like hell to be good enough, so the only way to get her off the team would be to somehow force her to fail. The only other option she could see was if she asked to be transferred to another team, and she thought that idea would go over like a lead balloon. Teamwork was essential, and the drone operators had been assigned to the team McNamara had thought each one would work best with. Moreover, after the long months she'd spent with her team, she didn't want to go through it all again with another bunch. She'd tested out at the top of the trainees, start to finish. No one else could protect her guys as well as she could. Damn if she'd transfer, damn if she'd quit. No matter how she looked at it, that left them with nowhere to go. One of them would have to bend, and it didn't look as if that was going to happen. "That was before." She said it just as coolly, and left it at that. Their next mission put them back in Columbia. Her work cell phone went off in the middle of the night, and the shot of adrenaline woke her up as thoroughly as if someone had poured ice water on her. She bolted out of bed, hit the brew button on the coffee maker she'd installed in the bathroom, and threw on her clothes before even checking instructions. She swished the mouthwash, gave her hair a quick brush, and secured it in a ponytail, then got her checklist to make sure she didn't forget anything important. Her go bag was in the trunk of her car, better packed now than it had been on that first trip. There had been a big powwow over whether or not the drones and the laptops, with their highly classified software, should stay with the operators or be safely stowed in some secure place and checked out only as needed. When a go team was activated, it usually had to go, top speed, and wading through protocol to get the drone and laptop would slow things down. On the other hand, Gina hadn't been wild about the idea of having something that valuable in her safekeeping, and neither had any of the other operators. Places were broken into all the time, and laptops stolen. In the immortal words of Forrest Gump, shit happened. The compromise was that a go-team supervisor, one per each shift, was assigned laptop/drone duty. Whatever team was activated, the supervisor had to get the designated laptop and drone and get it to their point of egress. Getting the correct laptop and drone was of the utmost importance because the drone was programmed to recognize the team members of the unit it had been assigned to. She couldn't specifically alert one team member if she didn't know who it was. She would have to alert all, wasting time and effort as they all reacted to a threat that applied to only one of them. So, individualized drone recognition. She did, however, have her headset and radio, the weapon she'd been instructed to carry if they were traveling by a means that allowed the team to go armed. This time the firearm had to go with her, meaning they weren't traveling commercial. She preferred commercial over hitching a ride on whatever military or cargo plane they could wrangle, but so far commercial was the exception rather than the rule. By the time she had checked all items off her list and was ready to go, the coffee was made. She turned off the machine, poured the coffee into a thermos she had sitting ready, dumped the grounds into a plastic bag placed there just for that purpose, gave the carafe a quick rinse, grabbed the rest of her stuff, and was out the door. She dropped the plastic bag containing the coffee grounds in a trash can at the curb. She had learned, after that horrendously long mission, to not put scraps of food in her kitchen trash can, assuming she'd be there to take it out before it started stinking. This type of job required thinking through every detail, mundane or not. At 2:13 a.m., she ran out of the condo building. Her car was covered with such a thick coating of frost that at first she thought it had snowed since she'd gone to bed. Unsurprised, but swearing under her breath anyway, she started her car, scraped the windshield just enough that she had a small, clear space to peer through, and was on her way. She reached the small private airfield they'd been instructed to go to, and the bottom dropped out of her stomach. This was the same airfield where Levi and Boom had forced her to parachute. Though it was dark now and deep in winter's grip, she recognized the hellhole. Instead of a twin otter idling on the runway, a small jet sat there, lights on, waiting for them. Levi was the first one there. The second arrival was herself. She parked beside his truck, took a bracing breath, squared her shoulders, and climbed out of her car. On the other side of his truck, a door opened and slammed shut as he got out. Levi being Levi, there was no interior light to give his position away. Annoyed, she realized all the others likely turned off their interior lights too. One more thing to add to her never-ending list of things to learn and do. Silently, she got out her gear, her go bag, her thermos, and locked the car, though considering how cold it was, waiting inside the car would be smarter.
"Come on," Levi said. "We'll board the plane and wait there."
"I need to wait for the airmail," she said, referring to Tweety and its carrier.
"He can bring it to the plane. Same amount of time, and you won't be cold. Besides, first ones on the plane snag the best seats."
"I'm just glad there are seats," she muttered. When they'd hitched a ride home in a cargo plane, comfort had been secondary. They'd parked themselves wherever they could, in whatever position they could manage. Two other sets of headlights were approaching. Their opportunity to be the first ones aboard was fast disappearing, so she fell into step beside Levi. She'd never been in a small jet before, and she was curious. The pilot met them at the steps and eyed their bags.
"Anything need to go on the hold?"
Levi said,
"No, we travel light."
That was an understatement. Their go bags were all small duffels, even hers. She had diversified and refined, and her bag now weighed a good 5 pounds less than it had before. She climbed the steps and poked her head in. The operative word was small. There was no standing in the cabin. It was like getting into a car. The interior had been configured to allow seating for 8 passengers, but the jet wasn't a luxury model. Aft were 4 seats facing forward, 2 to a row. Then there were 2 seats facing the other 4. The 4-seat was a 2-seat bench, like a small love seat, with an arm divider, and it faced the cabin door. Levi pushed her forward, into the plane, and by instinct she started down the narrow aisle to take one of the seats in the back.
"Here,"
Levi said, taking her arm and pretty much depositing her in the love seat, in the seat closest to the pilot. Then he dropped into the seat beside her.
"Not good." "I wanted to sit in back." "Yeah, but I need to sit here, and I want you beside me."
His dark eyes raked her face.
"Don't argue."
"Why do you need to sit here?" she asked, just as Trapper came up the steps and poked his head in.
"Because that's the one seat where he can stretch out his legs," Trapper groused. No matter how hard I try to get here first, he always beats me.
She could see that. Levi was the tallest of the team, and the space between the other seats would be tight, even for the other guys. What she didn't see was why she had to sit beside him. Shouldn't she take one of the other seats to give someone else more room? She would rather sit beside any of the others, even Voodoo. Voodoo's surliness was easier to take than feeling her nerves frayed by every brush of Levi's arm or his leg, or feeling the heat emanating from him, even across the armrest. Her senses were so acutely focused on him that she could even smell him, that stomach-clenching scent of heat and skin and testosterone. That was all it took to send her senses reeling back to those moments when she'd felt his weight bearing her down, the thrust of his knee between her legs, the hard bulge of his erection just where... She took a deep, quiet breath, forcing the memory sensation away. She was warm now, heat suffusing her entire body, even her fingertips. Her mouth felt full and soft, as if he'd been kissing her. This was torture. She started to move, no matter what he said. But then the other guys were climbing in, filling the other seats. Voodoo was the last to arrive, except for the headquarters guy who ran up with Tweety in the laptop. She got up to take possession of both, signing the three-part form he thrust at her, because even off the book's entities still had paperwork. And when she turned back, Voodoo had taken the last available regular seat. She curled her lip in his direction. Not that he cared, because he didn't see it. Resigned, she sat back down beside Levi and buckled in. As soon as they were in the air, Levi judged his knee against hers.
"You gonna share that coffee you've been hiding?"
he asked, a twinkle replacing the usual somberness in his eyes.
"I saw the thermos when you got out of the car, and I know you didn't fill it with milk."
Six other heads turned in her direction.
"Coffee,"
Boom said, his tone hopeful. Now she knew why Levi had wanted her beside him. Coffee was the lure. The realization was both lowering and relieving. "Blabbermouth," she muttered at him. Louder, she asked, "Did none of you think to bring coffee?" "Never mind, of course you didn't. You're men. I lost my head there for a second."
"It's the job," Boom said. "We just get up and go."
"So did I, but I punched a button on the coffee maker before doing anything else." Resigned, she looked around. "Anything y'all can use for cups? The thermos top is mine, and I'm not sharing." They began scrounging around. A few polystyrene cups were found. Levi stuck his head through the curtain that closed off the cockpit, and the pilot was good enough to donate a few more. The pilot had his own thermos of coffee, but he didn't offer to share. Smart man. Dividing the coffee eight ways, there was no way for any of them to get much more than an ounce each. Maybe an ounce and a half. But when it came to coffee, an ounce was better than nothing. Reduced to sips, she savored every one of them. It wasn't much, but it would get her through. After the coffee was gone, she hauled out the laptop and checked the program. There wasn't any real need to, but it kept her busy. Levi's long legs were stretched out, and he reclined his seat, settled into a more comfortable position, and tipped his cap forward to cover his eyes. Gina glanced around. Because the two seats closest to them were facing backward, Crutch, seated on the opposite side of the aisle and facing forward, was the only other team member whose face she could actually see, and he was already asleep. All of them had reclined their seats and were doing their combat nap routines, grabbing sleep while they could. They were the experienced ones, so she should follow their example. She took off her coat and pulled it over her like a blanket, then reclined her seat, curled on her side away from Levi, and closed her eyes. Maybe she dozed. At the least, she created a cocoon for herself, with her head almost covered by her coat. She could still feel Levi beside her, hear his deep breathing as he slept. That was worse, infinitely worse than if he'd been awake. This was what it would be like if they were together, having him beside her as they slept. She wouldn't be curled away from him. She would have her head pillowed on his broad shoulder, and his rough hands would reach for her every time they changed positions. Sometimes her back would be against him, and he'd cup her breasts. His penis would be nestled against her bottom. and if she wiggled just right, the head would slip inside her a little. Levi would wake up and... Behind her, he shifted position. His arm dropped heavily from the dividing armrest onto her hip, his fingers resting against her butt. She froze, listening, but his breathing remained as deep and even as before. Carefully, she lowered the edge of her coat enough to peep at him. His eyes were closed, his features relaxed. Slowly, moving in increments, she pulled one arm out from under the coat and hooked her finger in the cuff of his sleeve, lifted his arm. His eyes opened. She froze. That dark gaze roamed sleepily over her,
starting at her face and moving down, taking in the way the back of his hand rested against her butt, how gingerly she held his sleeve.
Slowly, ever so slowly, he moved his fingers back and forth, caressing, rubbing, as if he savored even this small contact. His sleepy gaze was raw and naked and hungry, slamming her with the focus of his need. Then his gaze shuddered, and silently he moved his arm back to his side of the seat. Just as silently, she turned away from him again, pulling her coat up to shield her face. From the protection of the coat, she stared at the dark cockpit curtain, her heart heavy. 16.
Swearing silently because cussing out loud took too much breath, Gina raced along the rough ground with the equipment bag banging against her back. Tweety was safe in the padded compartment made specifically for him, laptop, sensors, cameras, and power unit protected. Her back was neither padded nor protected, and all that banging damn well hurt. They were all pelting headlong through the Choco rainforest, because the double agent they'd been sent to rescue had chosen there to hide from the FARC insurgents pursuing him. Colombia was ostensibly more stable now, with an official agreement between the government and rebel forces, and a much ballyhooed disarmament of FARC. But a lot of hostile undercurrents were still running through the country. Insurgents, rebels, drug lords, government forces, and foreign elements still made for a volatile mix. She hated Choco. She felt guilty for hating a rainforest, but yeah, she despised it. Rainforests were great for the environment, but not for people. This place had freaking poison frogs. Touch one of the little devils and you went into cardiac arrest. At least they were neon-colored, so they were easy to stay away from. Except they were so tiny they could hide under a leaf. Even if there hadn't been any frogs, running through the rainforest wasn't a picnic in the park. Sundown was just a couple of hours away, and the damn place would get dark like someone turning out a light. In the meantime, she had to leap over giant roots. Fronds slapped her in the face. Monkeys howled as if mocking them and alerting predators to their intrusion. Hey, jaguars and snakes, and whatever bad things live here, there's human meat on the ground. And she had to keep trucking. And keep a lookout for those damn frogs. She didn't know about the jaguars, but if she'd ever been in a place likely to have jaguars, this was it. They were in a long single-file line, separated by just enough distance that they could keep each other in sight, which, because of the vegetation, wasn't truly that far. Levi was leading. The double agent was behind him, followed by Trapper. Boom, Snake, and Crutch were next, then Voodoo, then Gina, with Jelly on rear guard. They'd made contact with the guy, Ramirez, without any trouble. The rainforest had lit up her screen with heat signatures, but none large enough to be human except for her guys and Ramirez. She didn't like all the visual static, but she could work through it. She sat on a rock that the guys had made sure was clear of snakes and frogs and ants, and carefully guided Tweety through the dense foliage. She watched their backs, weaving in wide circles around them, making sure no one was lying in wait to ambush them, or approaching unseen. With all of Tweety's available eyes, getting anything by him was difficult. Someone would have to know how to disguise their thermal signature to slip past Tweety.
It was when they'd started out that they'd run into trouble. They were supposed to rendezvous with a couple of jeeps that would take them to an airfield to be picked up. The timing had to be tight, so that any unfriendlies in the area had only a narrow window of opportunity to get to them. Unfortunately, sometimes pure bad luck overrode the most careful planning. She couldn't deploy Tweety while they were on the move, so they had no warning. There was a shot from the right. She couldn't see what was happening because of the vegetation, but training kicked in and she hit the ground. Levi's voice in her earcom was as calm as if he were in a church.
Trapper, do you have a location?
Affirmative.
There was another shot, this one from a rifle.
Target down,
Trapper said. Gina's throat constricted so tightly she couldn't have made a sound. Knowing she could be in a violent situation was different from actually being in one. Someone had just died. One of them could have died. Ramirez was logically the target, but in reality the shooter could have been aiming at any of them, and with Tweety not in deployment, she had no way of guarding their backs. She felt as if she'd personally failed them, because this was precisely the situation she was supposed to be working.
Cover me,
Trapper said.
Affirmative,
Levi said, and the boom echoed him. They were on each side of Trapper, and literally the only two could see him. Gina tried to stay motionless and keep her breathing absolutely even and silent, while she listened for any unusual rustles around her. She could see Voodoo in front of her, weapon in hand, alertly scanning his surroundings. Jelly was somewhere behind her, making no sound that would betray his location, doing the same thing. She should have pulled her own weapon. She was required to carry one, required to be reasonably proficient with it, and though she'd practiced like heck to meet the minimum standards, she'd hit the ground without once thinking about using it, and now she couldn't get to it without making noise. Mistake number two. In her ear, Trapper said,
Confirmed kill. Babe, deploy Tweety and take a look around.
Affirmative, she replied, trying to replicate the dead-level tone they'd been using, and not knowing if she succeeded. Levi still sounded so damn normal, as if this was no more stressful than crossing the street. She rolled into a semi-sitting position, trying to keep herself as much under cover as possible, and swiftly unpacked the equipment bag. She'd done this so often that getting Tweety in the air was a matter of seconds, rather than minutes. She eased the drone in a 360, looking for any other unwanted company. She used the thermal imaging, found nothing human-like, though there were ways to thwart a heat signature. Because of that, she took her time, examined every hint of a heat signature she could find to make certain it was animal.
Babe.
Levi was showing some emotion in his tone now. Unfortunately, it was impatience. Hold your horses, she replied testily, and she took Tweety higher, into the understory where the monkeys lived. Monkeys that were uncharacteristically quiet, and she wanted to know why. But the ones she found were going about the normal business of monkeys, paying no attention to the human contingent on the forest floor. Relieved, she brought the drone home. Clear, she finally said.
Medic,
Levi said, back to the emotionless tone. Medic? Medic? Someone was hurt, someone at the front of the line where the shot had come from. Her blood began rushing through her veins, making her hands shake as she got Tweety and the laptop safely stowed once more. Jelly was there as she climbed to her feet, his sharp gaze constantly moving over the vegetation-clogged forest floor. A rainforest floor wasn't a thicket. The canopy restricted light and kept going relatively clear, but relatively didn't mean open. Fallen trees, ferns, tangled vines, all meant a short field of sight and provided a lot of cover. An army could hide behind the huge tree trunks, except she had already peeked around them with Tweety, and the team was alone, for right now. Now she drew her weapon, feeling like both a fool and a fake, but at least it was in her hand instead of her holster, as they moved forward as quietly as possible. Voodoo was already up and moving, his head swiveling back and forth like jellies. In less than a minute, they joined up with those in the front of the line, who'd formed a guard circle, each on one knee, around Levi and Snake. A long splinter of wood, if something at least 6 inches long and half an inch wide could be called a splinter, stuck out of Levi's right scapula, and a dark stain of blood was seeping down his shirt. Gina skidded to a halt, her stomach leaping into her throat. Common sense told her the wound wasn't particularly serious. He'd be okay with some stitches and antibiotics. Still, this was Levi. She wanted to shove Snake out of the way and take care of him herself. an insane reaction because Snake was a trained medic and she wasn't, but one that was so strong she had to look away to keep herself from acting on it. She forced herself to do what the others were doing and focus on their surroundings. A grunt from Levi jerked her gaze back to him, in time to see Snake use forceps to pull the splinter out. He dropped the bloody piece of wood on the ground. As soon as the splinter was out, Levi jerked his shirt off over his head and twisted his neck to try to get a look at the injury.
"Cut that shit out," Snake said as he mopped at the blood, which was trickling in rivulets down Levi's muscled back. "Just hold still."
He pressed the wad of gauze against the wound and with his other hand searched for something in his bag. He didn't carry a military-issue kit, but a long, narrow bag that he packed himself and carried quiver-style across his back.
"Shit," he said again.
Quickly he looked around and his gaze settled on Gina.
"Babe, come over here and get the quick clot out of the bag for me. Things must have got a little disorganized when I hit the ground."
Knowing she'd been chosen because she was the least effective team member when it came to hitting what she was shooting at, she swallowed her chagrin and slid her weapon back into her thigh holster, then secured it before approaching and kneeling beside the medic bag. While she searched through the disordered bag, Snake squirted the wound with saline solution to wash out any trash, then did more mopping before pressing the wad of gauze against the wound. Gina located the quick clot pack and tore it open.
"Slap it on," Snake said, and she did, holding the gauze pad in place while he quickly tore off strips of tape with his teeth and secured the pad.
She tried to keep her eyes firmly on what she was doing, though she was acutely aware of smooth, tanned skin and heat and a lot of hard muscle that made her mouth water. She tried, and she failed. She'd never seen Levi without a shirt before, for which she could only thank God, because if she had, she might have lost her fight with temptation. Some of the guys had gone shirtless in front of her, and though they were all in extremely good shape, they hadn't appealed to her. How could they, when all her senses had been focused on Levi? He was kneeling on his right knee, leaning forward a little with his left forearm propped on his left knee, his weapon in his right hand while Snake tended to him. The broad expanse of those powerful shoulders made her heartbeat stutter. She was so acutely aware of him that she noticed everything, the tufts of dark hair under his arms, the tattoo of the Ace of Clubs on his left shoulder, another tattoo of the letters PBJ, the initials of an old girlfriend, on his right shoulder, the deep furrow of his spine, the hot scent of his sweaty skin, the thick layers of muscle. He was on high alert, head turning back and forth as he surveyed the surrounding foliage, his dark eyes narrowed, searching.
"Okay, that's enough," he said, surging to his feet.
Snake efficiently stuffed his supplies back in the roll bag and slung it crossways across his back, morphing from medic to operator in the matter of a half second. Gina wasn't as fast getting back into mission mode. She forced herself to look away from Levi so she could regain both her breath and her composure. Still, he moved back into her line of sight as he jerked his bloody shirt back on over his head. She saw the dark patch of hair spread in a tree of life pattern on his chest, and her mouth filled with drool again. Stone-faced, she returned to her position between Voodoo and Jelly.
"I know who this is," Ramirez said, looking down at the body Trapper hauled into the open. "He's one of the Restrepos, three brothers who belong to FARC. They're known as the Hounds, because finding people is their job."
"Hunting you, specifically?" Levi asked.
"Seems likely."
Ramirez was from Chicago, but spoke a couple of the Colombian dialects like a native. He shoved his sweaty hair out of his face.
"They spread out when they're hunting.
The other two will have heard the shots and will be converging on us."
"Then we have to move," Levi said sharply.
"Babe, move to the center. Crutch and boom, fall back to the rear. Double time."
Gina opened her mouth to protest, then shut it. He wasn't moving her to protect her. He was moving her so the team members most accurate with their weapons were both in front and in the rear. They had to move now and move fast. They might run straight into one of the remaining Restrepo brothers, but that was a chance they had to take because what they couldn't do was sit in ambush, maybe for hours, and miss their ride out. They had already lost precious minutes, and the timing had been tight to begin with. They began double-timing out of the area, Levi still taking point. As before, Gina soon lost sight of everyone except Voodoo in front of her. But he would have eyes on the team member in front of him, just as Jelly, behind her, kept her in sight. The heat and humidity pressed down on her, making every breath an effort because the air felt so thick. She was coated with sweat, sticky sweat that made dirt and insects stick to her. Damn, why couldn't they ever go somewhere with a temperate climate, like maybe Seattle? Abruptly, she noticed that Voodoo wasn't in sight. She could hear him, but she'd lost line of sight, and that was bad. Shit, she couldn't let them get separated or they'd be hell to pay. She dug deeper, pushed harder, reached for every bit of speed she could muster. Her thigh muscles ached, her lungs burned. She ignored them. She'd breathe later when she were on the plane. Air was overrated anyway. She pelted around a huge tree, leaped over a giant protruding root, and slammed headlong into the side of a man who popped out of thin air, his head turned toward Voodoo, whose back was just visible, as the man raised a rag-wrapped weapon and pulled the trigger. Simultaneously, the sharp crack, oddly muffled by the vegetation and thick air, out of balance because her left ear was protected by the communication bud she wore, but her right ear was unprotected. Whump, as she collided with the shooter. Sick shock reverberated through her. Voodoo had likely been hit, maybe killed. The shard of sorrow that pierced her gut was unexpected. Voodoo was an asshole, but he belonged to her the way the other guys did. He was a part of the whole. The impact of the collision rattled her teeth, jarred her bones twice, because she hit the guy at full speed, bounced off, then hit the ground flat on her back. She landed on the equipment bag, knocking her breath out. The shooter staggered sideways, swung around to face the unexpected attack. She saw slanted dark eyes, a mop of matted, dirty black hair, bad teeth, his weapon coming up, and she knew she was dead. The realization was staggering and brought a sort of numbness with it. Then there was another crack, this one from behind her, and clots of red sprayed out of his chest. He staggered back, still bringing his weapon around toward her, and a second shot hit him square in the forehead. He went down like a rag doll, falling across her feet and legs. Gina gasped for breath, too much happening in a couple of seconds for her to process. She couldn't get her lungs to work, or her brain to move faster than wet mush. The body lay heavily across her legs, brain matter leaking out of the massive exit wound on the back of his head. She couldn't push it off, couldn't even sit up. Jelly ran up. Keeping his weapon aimed, he hooked his foot under the shooter's armpit, rolled him over, mostly off Gina's legs, but with her left foot still trapped. His expression was grim and set. No sign of the incorrigible team joker on his face now. He slanted a fast glance at Gina.
"You all right?" he asked.
Then snapped his attention back to the guy's body. No. Maybe. She didn't answer. Couldn't answer. All she could do was move her lips like a guppy, trying to somehow get air into her lungs. Her brain said she was okay. She'd just had the wind knocked out of her. But her body was in a panic, and the two were miles away from agreement. She totally took back the thought that air was overrated, because she couldn't breathe, and all of a sudden that was damn important. She had a confused sense of being converged on, the rest of the team surging around, weapons drawn and ready. She saw Voodoo, not only alive but evidently unhurt, though she wasn't sure how that had happened. Levi's face swam into view, his expression so savage she'd have run if she could. Fat chance of that. She was dying here, lying on the forest floor with damn bugs crawling on her, and they were too busy to notice. But he stood astride her like an avenging angel, holding an HK MP7 instead of a flaming sword, his head on a swivel as he looked for additional threats. Snake slid in beside her, as if he was a runner stealing second and she was the base. Before he could do anything, Levi must have realized what was wrong, because abruptly he leaned down and grabbed the waistband of her pants, jerked her up and shook her, let her drop, and blessed air rushed into her lungs. That hurt. For a minute, all she could do was suck in deep, shuddering breaths. Awkwardly, she rolled to the side as much as she could, What with Levi still standing astride her, Snake on her left, and the dead guy still lying across her foot. She was surrounded by men, and none of them were doing anything helpful. Well, except for Levi practically body-slamming her to the ground and knocking the air back into her. Her throat hurt. Her chest hurt. Her right ear rang. She coughed, gagged, and then managed to groan.
"Are you hit?"
Snake was asking urgently, when she could pay attention to something other than her body's desperate need for oxygen. Still unable to make a sound anywhere resembling an actual word, she coughed some more while she vehemently shook her head.
"What the fuck happened?"
Levi snapped.
"Ramirez, is this another one of the Restrepos?"
Ramirez crouched by the dead man, examined the face distorted by the headshot, then shook his head.
"No, I don't recognize this one. This means it isn't just the three of them. They have others with them."
Gina needed to sit up so she could cough and gag more efficiently. She tapped Levi on the knee. He didn't move. She felt as if she was going to choke to death if she didn't get up, but no one was paying attention. She glanced at Snake, but he was busy keeping surveillance on the forest around them, now that he knew she hadn't been shot. Damn it all. She punched Levi on the knee as hard as she could, then shoved at him. That predatory gaze swooped down to her. She shoved his leg again, and understanding flashed. He stepped over her, releasing her from the cage of his stance, and leaned down to grip her forearm and haul her to a sitting position.
"Thanks," she managed to say.
Though the word was so strangled, it sounded more like "thanks." She coughed violently, bent over from the waist, but finally her lungs and diaphragm and throat were all on the same page, and air was moving in and out, and her brain decided she wasn't in danger of dying. She'd seen football players get the wind knocked out of them before, but she hadn't realized how weird and awful it felt. In retrospect, she had a lot more sympathy.
"I repeat, what the fuck happened?"
Levi's tone sounded like the first step into hell, with worse waiting. Jelly said,
"Babe all of a sudden kicked into high gear. I didn't see the bastard until she hit him broadside. She looked like a fucking linebacker. A little linebacker, but still. He had voodoo square, if she hadn't plowed into him when she did. She bounced off him, hit the ground. He came around on her and I plugged him in the chest. Then the insurance tapped the head."
8 men looked at her. Gina wiped her watering eyes.
"It was an accident," she croaked,
and tried to get up, but the dead guy still had her left foot trapped. Annoyed, frustrated, she half-yelled, "Would someone get this dead guy off me?" Maybe she should be more upset that she'd just seen someone killed. Maybe she should be in hysterics that the guy's body was lying across her foot. Maybe in an hour or two she would be upset. But right now voodoo was okay and no one else had been hurt, her included. Because for that frozen moment when everything happened, she'd been sure she wouldn't survive, and all she wanted to do was get up and punch a tree or something. Boom and Ramirez rolled the dead guy into his back, off her foot. Freed, she pulled her knees up and rested her head on them, breathing hard and trying to get herself back. Being on the team was no longer an adventure, even though she'd known in her head that people could get killed. Actually seeing it happen was something else entirely. She gave herself maybe 5 seconds, then set her jaw and rolled to her feet. Like before, the gunfire would bring anyone in the area down on them, and they needed to get moving. She settled the equipment bag back into place and hoped Tweety and the laptop had survived her landing on top of them. "I'm ready," she said, though she wasn't certain of that. Her chest still ached, and her emotions felt numb. No one moved. Levi still looked like a thundercloud.
"You tackled an armed man?"
"No, I ran into him. Big difference. I told you, it was an accident."
They didn't believe her. She could see it in their expressions. Incredulity blended with something else she couldn't read. She shifted uncomfortably and said,
"Let's go."
Crutch said,
"I don't know, babe. Maybe instead of tackling the guy, you could have whistled or something to give Voodoo a heads up."
"Oh, for pity's sake. Angry, upset, and growing more hostile by the second, Gina shouted at them. I'm a girl. Girls don't whistle. We don't spit or scratch our balls either. Those are guy skills. Now, can we get the hell out of here before I throw up on someone?
To her chagrin, her eyes began burning, and she turned away before the burning became actual tears.
It didn't help that she really couldn't whistle, and Jordan and Taz had teased her relentlessly about it when they were growing up. Even her baby sister, Callie, could whistle. It was dumb for such a little thing to surface now and upset her, especially given that she knew Crutch was teasing.
You heard her, Levi snapped. We need to get the hell out of here.
So they did, falling into line and resuming their sprint through the green hell. She noticed Voodoo checking over his shoulder a couple of times, as if making sure she was still in sight. That was so unlike him, it unnerved her, especially given that she knew her speed was slower than before. Her energy level had dropped, and she couldn't seem to do anything about it. Even worse, Jelly was sticking closer to her than before, too. She didn't want them babying her, because that might undermine her fragile self-control. When they were finally on their way back home, she'd have to set them all straight on what had really happened. Despite their previous bad luck, they didn't encounter any more of the Fark hunters, and reached the designated clearing just a half minute after two jeeps roared to a stop. They all hopped on board, the drivers floorboarded the gas pedals, and they bumped and swerved and tempted fate at a dangerous speed until they reached an airstrip with another small plane waiting for them. This one didn't hold a candle to the small jet that had brought them in, but this one wouldn't need as much runway, and Gina didn't care if they all had to pack themselves in like sardines, as long as that engine had enough power to get them airborne. It did. Even better, it took them to another airstrip, where a cargo plane awaited. As uncomfortable as cargo planes were, at least she'd be able to stretch out her legs, which was more than she'd been able to do in the small plane. She was exhausted. Everything that had happened had drained her dry, and the run through the forest was the least of it. Levi and Boom went to talk to the pilots. The other guys stowed their gear, grabbed some bottles of water, began winding down. Gina stood alone for a minute, still trying to ground herself, and finally boosted herself into the cargo hold and found a flat place to sit. Wearily, she unbuckled the equipment bag, took out Tweety and the laptop, and checked both for damage. They were fine, so she repacked them and settled back, letting the momentary solitude sink in and relax her. She would have only a few minutes, if that long, but by the time the guys began loading up, she had regained a measure of equilibrium. Enough, at least, to last until she got home, where she could truly be alone. The guys began boosting themselves into the hold. Levi tossed her a bottle of water and said,
"Hydrate."
Just the way he had that very first day, months ago. She caught the bottle and began drinking, only then realizing how thirsty she was, and how good the water felt on her strained throat. Ramirez climbed on board, and his dark eyes swept the interior of the cargo hold. His gaze lit on her, and before she knew it, he was lowering himself to sit beside her.
"Real introduction," he said, giving her a slight smile. "My first name is Joseph, and your babe?"
"Modell," she said, a little bit at a loss.
"When we get to D.C., and I've been debriefed, would you be interested in..."
From across the hold, Levi said,
"Get away from her, or we'll break both your legs."
He was stretched out, his eyes half closed, but the dark gleam under his thick lashes was hard and direct. Trapper looked up from where he was wiping down his weapon.
"That's if I don't shoot your ass first."
But Amidas's eyebrows shot up, and he held up both hands in surrender.
"I was just..." "Yeah, we know what just is," Boom muttered. "You heard the man. Get away from her."
Confused, stunned, Gina looked around at all the guys as Ramirez did what he was told, and moved to another spot. They all looked pretty ragged and lethal, and none of them were smiling. What the hell?
"We heard about your rep," Levi said to
Ramirez, which explained their sudden hostility. She was tired, but not so tired that she couldn't figure out Ramirez was evidently a player. He was good-looking enough, but she didn't have time to play. Besides, he wasn't Levi. Voodoo settled into the spot on her left that Ramirez had vacated. He sat silently for a moment, then held out his left fist toward her. Her sense of surprise was so great she almost gave him a what-the-hell look. But she recovered after a split second, and silently bumped his fist with hers. Okay, the social stuff had been taken care of. Now she could close her eyes and maybe grab a nap.
That's it? Crutch demanded. He's been an asshole to you since day one, and all he has to do was offer a fist bump and you're letting him off the hook? He owes you big time, babe.
Gina forced her eyelids to at least half-mast. I know he's an asshole, she snapped. But he's my asshole. One of them anyway. She paused and thought about what she'd just said. She heaved an exhausted sigh. That didn't sound right. There were some snickers going around the cargo hold, tired laughter that was drowned out as the engine noise built to a roar, and the plane began moving. Gina didn't care. They knew what she meant, and so did she. They were all her guys. They were a team. 17. Levi opened his eyes a slit and looked across the cargo hold to where Babe lay curled on her side, fast asleep. She was using her equipment bag as a pillow. The roar of the engines drowned out even the snores he knew would normally rattle the rafters of a building, but cargo planes weren't built to be quiet inside. About 2 feet away, on her far side, Voodoo was slouched against some boxes, his chin on his chest as he too grabbed some sleep. Sleep would have been nice, but Levi couldn't quite get there. His shoulder hurt just enough to be annoying, especially when he leaned back. Not only that, he was still too rattled from those brief nightmarish moments when he'd thought Babe had been shot. He could see she was alive and moving. He'd have sworn she was glaring at him. But fuck. For a minute there, he'd been ready to burn the fucking rainforest down and destroy everything in it. Reining himself in hadn't been easy. But she was okay. The relief hollowed him out, knocked him sideways. And somehow she'd kept the Fark asshole from shooting Voodoo, though she'd said it was an accident. How she accidentally tackled someone was beyond him. But maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. With her thought process, it was tough to tell. However it had happened, she'd finally won Voodoo over, so at least now they wouldn't have to listen to his bitching. What rattled Levi most of all was that, accident or not, she'd thrown herself into the middle of a hot situation. Being heroic wasn't in her job description, and he had a hard time handling the idea. Then he got on the damn plane and had to watch Ramirez coming on to her. He'd barely been able to change the I to we when he threatened to break the bastard's legs. Shit. Keeping his distance kept the team working smoothly, but on another fundamental level it wasn't working at all, because it didn't do anything to lessen his attraction to her. He'd hoped that, like most of the time when he was attracted to a woman, after a while the attraction started fading, whether or not he did anything about it. The fact was, no matter how much he'd enjoyed the various relationships he'd had, in the end the work had always been more interesting. But he'd been around Gina for months now, and he still got off on it. Damn, he liked looking at her. Liked being with her. She was sexy with those two-toned blue and gold eyes of hers, all that long, heavy hair, the way she laughed and cussed and tackled life. Her expression was usually that of someone who was about to get up to some mischief, or at least enjoyed the thought of mischief even if she didn't do anything about it. She was funny, gutsy, and had a level head. She finessed keeping that fine balance between being friendly with the team members without letting anything sexual intrude. She treated them like brothers. She got along with Teresa and Ilani. She did her job and did it well. She laughed and joked, and sometimes he didn't pay attention to what she was saying because he was too busy just watching her. To keep any of the guys from noticing, he tried not to look at her all that often. But sometimes he let himself tease her because all of them did, on one level or another. All in all, he couldn't find a damn thing about her that he didn't like, except that she was off limits. And when he relaxed, like now, that was when he couldn't stop his imagination from stripping her naked and pulling that fine, toned body of hers under him. In his mind, he ran his hand over the curve of her ass, then reached lower to where she was hot and wet, pushed his fingers in and got her ready for his cock. The one time he'd had her under him, touching her, kissing her, she hadn't tried to hide anything. She'd been honest and real. She was the only woman he'd ever felt jealousy over. He hadn't been kidding about breaking Ramirez's legs. The truth was, since he'd met her, all he'd been doing was marking time, waiting for her to quit, then waiting for her to fail. And now, just waiting. He could feel his patience stretching thinner and thinner. He was fighting to maintain the status quo, and the internal battle was turning all his inner barricades to rubble. Nothing had ever broken him. He'd always maintained that inner surety of his center. He knew what he wanted out of life, knew his own guidelines, his strengths and weaknesses. Doing what he did gave him the kind of challenge and satisfaction he needed. This was different. Gina was different. Sooner or later, he'd break under the strain. Restlessly, he changed positions. Finally, he managed to get halfway comfortable. He was able to grab some sleep, waking when the thunderous sound of the engines changed.
He'd been on so many planes that his subconscious recognized the altered pitch as a signal that they were slowing in preparation for approaching and landing. He stretched and got more water. Around him, the others were stirring too, alerted by the change in the noise level.
Gina slept on, her soft lips barely parted, but she didn't look particularly blissful. Faint, fleeting expressions gave her a troubled look. He watched her for a minute, then nudged her sneaker with the toe of his. She gave a quick little frown, pursed her lips, and that was it. He nudged harder. Another frown, and this one looked as if it meant business. On the third try, he gave the sole of her shoe a light kick and said sharply,
"Babe, wake up."
She sat up with a jerk and blindly threw a punch that would have deballed him if he hadn't jumped back. But he'd been halfway prepared for that sort of reaction. The other guys started laughing. Scowling, she looked around at them all, then scrubbed her face. "I was dreaming," she muttered, "about the dead guy on my foot."
"Thought you might be," he replied,
keeping his tone neutral.
"We'll be landing in a few. There's a forward lab if you need to go."
Without a word, she jumped to her feet and headed forward, weaving her way through the secured pallets and boxes. She needed to piss more often than the men did, so over the months they'd all adjusted to stopping for more piss breaks and letting her go first. Levi sat down again, thinking philosophical thoughts about the realities of traveling with a woman. Actually landing took them another half hour. According to his watch, there were a couple of more hours until sunrise. At least they'd had some sleep, and none of them were as jet-lagged as they had been the previous mission. He and Ramirez would go straight to debriefing, but the rest of them could catch a little downtime. The plane rolled to a stop, and the big ramp lowered. They got their gear and wearily trudged down the ramp and toward where they'd left their vehicles. As soon as they were off and clear, the ramp was raised again, and the plane taxied around to take off for its final destination.
"Come on, you can ride with me,"
he said to Ramirez, striding past him toward his truck. Ramirez gave him a wary look.
"Will my legs be okay?" "As long as you stay away from Babe," he replied equably.
He unlocked the doors, leaned in to insert the key and start the engine, then began scraping frost off the windshield.
"Like seven big brothers, huh?"
Ramirez said as he slid into the passenger seat.
"She has brothers. We're the mean-ass guys she works with."
He didn't want to be her damn brother. He wasn't content with being the mean-ass guy she worked with either. But for now, he'd have to settle. As he drove the mostly deserted pre-daylight streets to headquarters, Ramirez, evidently he had more balls than brains, said,
"She's a grown woman."
Levi grunted.
"Noticed that, did you? Did you also notice that she's more than capable of telling us to shut up and mind our own business if she was interested? What does that tell you?"
Ramirez frowned.
"Okay, shit. I get it. She wasn't interested. She'd have thrown something at us if she had been."
They reached headquarters and entered the nondescript building, signed in. Ramirez went one way, Levi the other. They would be debriefed on different aspects. Ramirez and what he'd learned while undercover, Levi on the exfil mission itself. Two cups of coffee helped him get through the debriefing in a relatively benign mood, but he was damn hungry by the time they finished. As he was heading out of the building, he heard his name called and turned to see Kodak striding